We are in Shmuel Aleph, still in Perek Chaf Bet, chapter 22, and Shaul has alleged treason, and we're going to see what Doeg does. We're going to try to understand what Doeg does. There's an awful lot here. I gave you a very long source sheet. We're not getting through all of that, but I don't know, somehow I just ended up going and going. So, again, we know where we are, chapter 22, Pasuk Tet, sentence 9. Shaul has heard that David is gaining strength. Whatever exactly it was that he heard, how he heard it, we talked a little bit about what that meant in the beginning of the chapter, but he heard, and he said that the reason, not the reason, he said, there's a conspiracy afoot. All of my allies have told me nothing. They must be conspiring against me. Nobody told me about my son Yehonatan. And Doeg responds in Pasuk Tet in sentence 9, sentence 10. And he says, I saw Ben Yishai go to Nov, to Achimelech, son of Achituv. And we already noted last time that there are accusations already implicit here. He doesn't say that David went to the Mishkan. He says he went to Achimelech. Sounds like there's a plot personally with Achimelech. It's not just that he went to the Mishkan and then Achimelech happened to be there. Number two, built in with number one, is that David is looking for an alliance with this fellow Achimelech personally. So, Vayish'allo b'ashem v'tzeidan nasan lo. He says, Achimelech inquired of God for David, and he gave him support. Ve'ezcher of Goliath ha'plishti nasalo, and he gave him the sword of Goliath. So first of all, he mixes up the order of events, putting the request of God first. Where we said, when we read chapter 21, if there's a request of God at all, it seems to be after the food and before the sword. And we talked about last time Malbim's explanation for why he wants to do that. Two reasons. Number one, to explain why Achimelech would have given the food and given the weapon despite Doeg being there. He had to do that because he was already in the Mishkan to consult the ephod with the question. So if anybody should say, well, clearly Achimelech did this innocently, he wouldn't have done it in front of you if you were conspiring against Shaul, the answer is he had no choice. That's number one. Number two, Malbim notes, that he is alleging that he asked the Kohen, Achimelech, asked about David's plan, so he knew what David was doing. And yet, he gave David the food and the weapon afterwards. He assumes that the inquiry of the ephod was explicit, that David was saying something like, I am launching a coup against Shaul, is that good or bad? And yet, Achimelech helped David with food and a weapon anyway. Of course, we understand that that's not necessarily what happened at all. But that's the way that that Malbim understands what Doeg is saying by mixing up the order of events and putting the inquiry first. I just realized as I was talking why this sounds so a little bit unfamiliar for people. We had a Hanukkah shiur last Thursday, so this is 2 weeks. You have to remember. Okay. Another thing that Doeg does here in sentence 10 is he says that Achimelech inquired of God and gave the food. He mentions nothing about David asking for it. It sounds like Achimelech is doing this on his own initiative. He also omits that David asked for any weapon. He makes it sound like the whole arrangement was specifically to get the sword of Goliath. And finally, he omits anything that could exonerate Achimelech. He omits the whole thing about David saying, I'm on a mission from Shaul. That's not there. And Abarbanel insists, as does Malbim, that Doeg knows. Doeg was in the Mishkan and he knows full well, and yet he's hiding the information. So Doeg has it in for Achimelech. We don't yet know why, but that's what's emerging from this passage. All right, we remember what we're talking about? Okay. The half of us seem to have gray boxes in front of us. If anybody wants to move their gray boxes, that would be great. If not, not the end of the world. So we are now up to Pasuk Yud Aleph, sentence 11, and Shaul's reaction to what Doeg says. We're going to go through Shaul's reaction. We're going to go through Achimelech's response. And then I want to ask the big question of, why does Doeg want to destroy Nov? What is this? What is it that Doeg is trying to accomplish here? So first of all, Pasuk Yud Aleph, sentence 11, look at Shaul's response. Vayishlach HaMelech L'Kroes Achimelech Ben Achituv HaKohen. Shaul sends for Achimelech. V'yeis Kol Beis Aviv HaKohanim Asher Benov. And not just that, his entire clan of Kohanim in Nov. Vayavam El HaMelech, and all of them came to the king. Important note. You could read sentence 11 as saying that all of the Kohanim of Nov are family of Achimelech, right? You could legit read it that way. You could see that you could say here the reading of the sentence is to call Achimelech Achituv HaKohen and all of his family the Kohanim of Nov. However, we're going to see later on when we get to the death toll that it's not necessarily the case. That it's not necessarily so that the entire city of Kohanim are his immediate family. But that's one thing to just calling your attention to. The other thing is, he calls the family altogether. Why is he calling the family? He should just call Achimelech. That's it. And the answer seems to be that Doeg made it seem like the family is in on it. By saying he went to the house, it seems like this is personal and that this is a family thing. That's the idea. And so Doeg says, Vayomer Shaul. Shaul says, Shema na ben Achituv. He says, listen up, son of Achituv. And you notice, the same way he referred to David as Ben Yishai, right? This is now ben Achituv, which tells you the word na. Yeah, we're always debating how to read the word na. Na can mean please, and na can mean now. There's little doubt that na here means now. He ain't saying please. He says, listen up, son of Achituv. Vayomer hinini adoni. And Achimelech says, here I am, my master. What do you want? He wasn't in the room for the conversation until now. Vayomer elav Shaul, and Shaul says to him, Lamak shartem alai ata uven Yishai. Why are you and the son of Yishai conspiring against me? This is not a question. This is an accusation. Right? He didn't say, are you conspiring against me? He said, why are you conspiring against me? Bisitcha lo lechem v'cherev. You gave him food. You gave him the sword. Vishah lo belokim, and you inquired of God for him, lakume laila orev kayom hazeh, to rise against me as an attack, a surprise attack. The ambush is that word orev that Shaul likes. Clear as day. He says, that's what you are doing to me. Malbim notes that Shaul reorders the three deeds. He goes from the lightest to the most severe. Right? You gave him food. You gave him a weapon, and you used the tools of the Mishkan to inquire of God on his behalf. How dare you do that? That's the way that he reads it. It's interesting to note, I'll ask you what you think on this one. It just occurred to me as I was reading the sentence. He did skip one detail. He skipped the fact that the sword is Goliath's sword. Why did he not mention that? It was important to Doeg.
Maybe it reminds Shaul of the loss of David's greatness, so he doesn't want to...
Close. That's a good thought. I would go a little further. I thought you were going to say something a little different. It reminds him of something. Yes, Hannah.
He doesn't want to admit that David did something that he couldn't do.
Yeah. He was the one, remember when we learned that perek, he was the one who was supposed to fight Goliath. And he didn't, and David did it. I think he'd rather just forget the whole Goliath thing, if you don't mind. It's a sword. Just a sword. That's all it is. And for all I know, that's why Doeg specified it. Maybe Doeg specified it Davka in order to make him more insecure. They could be read that way for sure. So he makes this accusation. The Medrash on Tehillim adds to this in a very interesting way. You know what? I didn't bring it on the sheet, I think. That's odd. I didn't bring it on the sheet, but the Medrash on Tehillim says that Vishaol lo be'elokim, inquiring of God, is only done on behalf of a king or somebody the nation needs. So it's not only that he inquired of I'm just looking to see if I put it anywhere on the sheet, but I really didn't. Missed it. Okay. It's not only that he's making an accusation of having helped David, but you helped David in the way that you'd be helping a king. So that was inappropriate as well. That's the allegation. Clear on the allegation? Yes, yeah, Susan. So it appears. I mean, Yehonasan knows. There are people who know. But it seems not necessarily to be public, or to put it differently, it's not common knowledge enough to be safe saying that to Shaul.
But also Shaul...
One second. Susan, what? Yeah. So Achimelech does not know. Or let me put it differently. If Achimelech knows, it's not a factor in his decision-making, because if it was, David wouldn't have had to lie to him.
Okay.
You know?
Really, so Shaul's getting away with all of this because people are unaware that David...
Or those who are aware really don't feel safe mentioning it to the ex-king. There are some people you just don't mention this to. Ricky and then Chana.
David may be the king, but Shaul has the power.
Yeah.
So
it appears, yeah. Chana?
The fact that the Achimelech asked for the Urim is because he thought it's a mission for Shaul. It doesn't mean that he knew something about David. He thought he's asking because it's a message from the...
I don't think that Achimelech did it because of that. I think Achimelech's answer will be, he told me he was on a mission from you. And it's appropriate for me to ask on behalf of your mission. That's absolutely, you're going to see that in the next lines. Let's see Achimelech's defense. Pasuk Yudalid. Vayan Achimelech es Hamelech vayomar. Achimelech answered the king. He says the following. Umi v'chol avadecha ki David ne'eman v'chasan Hamelech v'sara mishmatecha v'nichbad b'veisecha. He says, what? I have four reasons for trusting David. Number one, there is nobody more loyal to you than David. David is not a traitor. By nature, David is not a traitor. That's number one. Number two, Chasan HaMelech, hello, he's your son-in-law. Now, he's kind of an estranged son-in-law. He did not get invited to Thanksgiving dinner. Or, more appropriately, he got invited and he fled. David is not in that part of the family. Nonetheless, the point is, he's family to you, Achimelech says. Which, I guess, also supports the idea that no, people are not aware, because you wouldn't have said that if you knew what had happened with him and Michal. Visar el mishmatecha. He's loyal. He does what you tell him to do. Mishmatecha from the word shma. He does whatever you make known to him that he should do. V'nichbad b'veisecha. And he's honored in your household. He's not somebody looking for honor elsewhere. Why would it even dawn on me that I shouldn't help him? And then he says something which the commentators read multiple ways. And I gave you on the sheet three different ways to read it. I'm going to show you how to read it each way. The first way to read it is that this is a question. Hayom hachilosi lish'olo be'lokim. He says, is today the first time that I inquired of the Urim V'tumim for him? Like I said to Chana a minute ago. Chalilali. He says, it would be a desecration for me to think that there's something wrong. Al yaseim ahmelach be'avdo. I'll skip the rest of the sentence. We'll get there. That was the first way to read the first half of the sentence. Second way to read it is a statement. Hayom hachilosi lish'olo be'lokim. Today was the very first time that I inquired for him of God, but I had no idea it was an issue. This was the very first time. How would I have known that there was a problem? Chalilali will be a desecration again for me. That's the second way. Rav Bazak has a different approach. Both of those approaches appear in various commentators. Rav Bazak has a third approach. He says it's denial. I have a hard time reading it with the word hachilosi. I think the word hachilosi gives the lie to this read. But it's an entertaining read. He says, it's denial. Do you think that I inquired of God for him? Chalilali, it would be a desecration. I think the word hachilosi indicates that's not really what's going on. But it's an interesting read. He's saying, no, I didn't inquire of God. I don't know what Doeg is talking about. And remember, in chapter 21, we never saw explicitly that he inquired of God. So, three different ways to read it. Bottom line is, he says, absolutely not. And so he continues to say, Al yaseim hamelach be'avdo davar b'chol beis avi. Let the king not say anything about his servant, me, about my household. Ki lo yada avdecha b'chol zos davar katono gadol. I had no idea that there was anything up. How in the world would I know? Now, he only answered regarding inquiring of God. So Abarbanel, in source number 2 on your sheet, notes that, and he explains, U'le'inyan halachan v'hacherav lo zachar akasuv tshuvaso. The text doesn't tell us what he said about the bread and the sword. V'asvarno sana shamar lo ha'emes. But presumably, he told him the truth. Right? Yes, he told me that he was on a mission from you, and therefore I gave him bread, and therefore I gave him a weapon. Because why wouldn't I have done so? So that's the way Achimelech responds to Shaul. So the big question is, why does Doeg have it in for Nov? So on a basic level, the answer is, it fits with what we said in the previous parak, in the previous chapter, when we talked about Doeg's role and his identity. Meaning, if he is the Satan of Shaul, his goal is to mislead Shaul, then this is a way to drag down Shaul, right? He is going to bring Shaul into violence against an innocent city. If he's jealous of David, or if he is, as I portrayed him, the anti-David, he has the Esav side in that Esav-Yaakov balance, maybe this is a way to make sure that David will have no allies. Nov will not be there for him, and anybody in the future will not be there for him. And Ricky emailed me before she went away, adding the following thought, that maybe people would actually blame David for what happened in Nov, which we're actually going to discuss before we're done with the chapter, the idea that there is guilt coming for David. Nov will be seen, in fact, as being David's fault. So you have that idea that it's doing this not to bring down Shaul, but to bring down David. It's not about Nov. It's about David and Shaul. Third approach that we had in explaining Doeg is that Doeg is held up by our sages as an example of a Torah scholar whose Torah does not affect him. He has a corrupt nature. That is supported in source number 3. Source number 3 is a parak of Tehillim which identifies itself as being said regarding Doeg. Take a look, please. I brought it on the sheet because I really wanted to make sure that people would actually see it. So you see the Hebrew and the English. Just, this is not the full chapter. It's the first, actually no, I'm sorry, this is the full chapter. I'm only going to go through the first 6 verses. Lamanatzeach ha'maskil David, that's the opening. Bevo Doeg ha'adomi vayaged l'Shaul vayomer lo ba David el beis Achimelech. When Doeg came and told Shaul, saying, David has come to the house of Achimelech. So David says, Matis Halel Bara'a Hagibor, Chesed Kel Kol Hayom, using the JPS translation here. Why do you boast of your evil, brave fellow? God's faithfulness never ceases. Havos Tachshov Lishonecha Kisar Milutash Osei Remiya. He says, your tongue devises mischief like a sharpened razor that works treacherously. Doeg is an evil person. He uses his tongue to cause harm. Ahavtara mitov. Sheker midaber tzedek. Sela. He says, you love doing evil over doing good. You love lies over speaking truth. Ahavta kol divrei vala lashon mirma. You love all, what do they call it here? Pernicious words. Okay. Words of swallowing up. You speak mirma. You speak trickery. And so on. We're going to come back to some of Tehillim 52 later on, I hope. But the point is, he's just an evil, evil guy. Nob never did anything to him. This isn't personal. It's just who he is. But I would throw another idea to you. Another two ideas, actually. First of all, Rav Bazak. In source number 4, I brought you a piece from Rav Amnon Bazak on this chapter, in which he suggests that Doeg is doing this out of a desire for self-preservation. Meaning, take a look at number 4. Etzem ha'uvda she'Doeg ha'adomi lo pana el Shaul me'yozmato v'sipra lo ha'maseu shel Achimelech. The fact that Doeg didn't come running to Shaul right after he saw David in Nov, right? He didn't say anything until Shaul made an accusation later when David left Me'arat Adulam, right? That's when he's going to make his statement. The very fact that he waited, Me'ida testifies, Ki hu yadahi tev shaloya zebe hechrech ma'ase begida. He knew, you're going to have to wait, Ricky, he knew that this was not an act of treason. He didn't say anything the whole time. Adraba doeg menaseh ka'es legageles ha'ashma me'alav el Achimelech. But now what he wants to do is shift the blame from himself to Achimelech. Sherei, what did the blame for what? Sherei doeg hayaha acharon shera'ez David mibein mekuravav shel Shaul. Because Doeg is the last one among Shaul's allies to have seen David. He laid eyes on David and he hadn't said anything. And he hadn't done anything about it. So the deal here, the story here, is that Doeg feels himself under threat. Like, wait a minute. He's talking about people being allies of David in his inner circle and conspiring. I saw David and I didn't say anything. And so he plays up elements of the story to find favor in Shaul's eyes and to increase the blame on Achimelech. This is classic political machinations in the king's inner circle. Right? You're worried about your own position, so you find somebody else, make that person the scapegoat. That's the way to do it. The only problem I have with Rav Bazak's explanation, I think it's a plausible political idea. The problem that I have with it is, go ahead to sentence 22 in the chapter, when Doeg will be talking to Evyasar, the last refugee of the city, and he's going to say to him, I knew Doeg was there that day. And I knew he would tell Shaul, I am responsible for everything that happened. If you're going to tell me that Doeg really was not himself a threat, and it was just now for self-preservation, then it's a little odd that David is saying, I knew there would be trouble once I saw Doeg. It really sounds like David knows Doeg is a threat. So that's my challenge here in reading this. You could resolve it I think it could be resolved. And the truth is, we'll see more later on, because you're going to see what Doeg does in response to Shaul's order. So that's another approach. Ricky, you're going to wait a little bit more still. Sorry. I'm using this new method where I do a unit and then I take questions. So we now have the possibility that Doeg is acting having nothing to do with Nov. It's not about Nov. It's about who he is and his relationship with Shaul, about his relationship with David, or just about his plain old wickedness. You have the idea from Rav Bazak that it's self-preservation. But I'm going to give you a different approach altogether. And really, I think this is pshat. I do think this is pshat. I don't think this story is really about Doeg. I think this story is about the end of the house of Eli. And Doeg is just a willing pawn. We've seen that elsewhere. You'll remember, everybody for sure will remember, we learned chapter 4 from this book. Chapter 4 was right after Hashem decreed the fall of the house of Eli. And then in the beginning of chapter 4, we saw them begin a war with the Plishtim and take the Aron out to war, leading to the demolition of Shiloh and the death of Eli and the death of his two sons, Hophni and Pinchas. And there, when you read the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, Perek Dalet, it looks like Shmuel came with a message from God saying they should go to war against the Plishtim. So God sent them in order for this to happen. Another example of this, in the beginning of Malachim Aleph, those were in my Tuesday class, Shlomo exiles Ebyasar, the last member of the house of Eli, as punishment for his help for Adoniyahu. That whole story in which Ebyasar helps Adoniyahu is just, again, another part of ending the dynasty of Eli. Hashem is moving the pieces into place. Or, later on in Malachim, Yerubam ben Nevat is going to start a coup and end up taking away the northern 10 tribes. That, though, is really a punishment to Shlomo and his descendants because of the idolatry that Shlomo imported into the Jewish people. Yerubam is just a pawn in what's going on. And you could bring many, many cases in Tanakh like this. Doeg is very willing to participate, but fundamentally, this isn't about him. You could go all the way back to Hashem hardening Paro's heart. Yeah, Hashem is using somebody. Whether you say Hashem removed Paro's free will, like the Rambam says, because he deserved it, or whether you say that Hashem gave Paro the strength not to be intimidated by the plagues, and then he made his own decision. Whichever way you're going to read that, you could apply the same things here and say, maybe Hashem really made Doeg do this, because Doeg had gone too far in his own activities. Maybe Hashem just put Doeg in the position to do it. Whatever you want, whatever Hashem did with Doeg, he did something, but what I do believe is that Doeg's participation is not a requirement for this to happen. And what I mean by that is, let's pretend for the moment that Doeg uses his free will. And when Shaul says, who's conspiring against me? Doeg keeps his mouth shut. He doesn't say anything. Nov still would have been destroyed. One way or another, Nov is gone. We have a phrase that we use consistently in the Medrash, Harbe Shluchim Lamakom. Hashem has lots of agents. Hashem has lots of ways to get stuff done. It didn't have to be Doeg. So Doeg deserves to be punished for what he did. We're going to talk about Shaul getting punished for what he did. We have to get into that discussion. That'll be not this week. That'll end up being next week, I expect. But Doeg deserves to be punished for what he did, for sure, because he was the one who brought it about. But it was going to happen anyway. Similarly, take a look at source number 5, please. Gemara in Sanhedrin. I've been waiting to use this line in the Gemara for a long time. Remember, David goes to Nob because he needs food, he needs a weapon, maybe because he needs to inquire of Hashem. Yonasan was the one who sent David on his way, right? The whole feast for Rosh Chodesh, and then afterwards their meeting and the arrows and all of that. How hard would it have been for Yonasan to bring him a little food from the feast? Says the Gemara, Imalei helvahu Yonasan leDavid shtei kikros lachem. Had Yonatan lent David two loaves of bread, lo nehrga nov irakonim velo nitra ledoeg haadomi velo nehrag shaul ushloshes banav. Nov would not have been destroyed, Doeg would not have been chased away, Shaul and his three sons would not have been killed. So this is not meant literally. Number one, we know that because Hashem said that the line of Eli was going to be destroyed. The Gemara can't be saying that that wasn't going to happen. That's number one. Number two, even if David did not need food, he still needed a weapon. And he still wanted to inquire of Hashem. That's not really the statement. The point of the story is the moral lesson about chesed for others. Even though Yehonasan did so much for David, he saved David's life from Shaul, he sacrificed his own shot at the throne, he still should have provided, even just lending, he should have provided food for David. That's the point that they're trying to make here. But the story really is going to happen. Nob is going to be destroyed, no matter what Doeg does, no matter what Yehonasan does, and this really isn't about Doeg and Nob, it's about God and Nob. To me, that's a very important point to understand. So I'm going to sum up what I said, then I'm going to go to Ricky, then I'm going to go to Etty, but I thank everybody for being patient, because I think this is actually a better way to learn. I think it's really working well. So again, why does Doeg have it in for Nob? Could be that it's about him and Shaul. Could be it's about him and David. Could be it's because he's a rotten guy. Could be self-preservation, shifting the blame off of himself. But fundamentally, Nob is gone. And the story is, really, Hashem destroying Beis Eli and Doeg being a willing participant in that process. That's what I'm getting at. Ricky.
After all these brilliant points you made, my question is very minimal, so I'll pass.
Are you sure?
I just want to know why Doeg wasn't in Nob to begin with, if it's any important.
Right, so go back to when we first learned this chapter, the beginning of the chapter, when we first saw him in the Mishkan, and we suggested that may testify to his religious role. Remember, we talked about the word Netzar and the different meanings of what Netzar might be. But it seems that he was there for some kind of religious ritual. So it appears.
So Shaul couldn't interpret it as Doeg trying to wrestle up some support for himself.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, he could. I mean, Shaul could interpret whatever he wants. Certainly Rabbi Zakfit would argue that, yeah. Etty.
You were saying something about Yonatan should have given David maybe a weapon or food.
Yeah.
But Yonatan saw David after throwing the arrows that he went hunting or whatever with his nar. So he couldn't really very well take with him food and a weapon for David.
Right. Yeah, I think the Gemara's point really is a separate moral lesson about doing chesed for people. I think it's really just, it's using the story with Yehonatan in order to teach, hey, you know, help people out. That's really what it's doing.
They didn't know what would be the outcome at the time, him and David, when they made that.
Well, no, when Yehonatan goes out on the third day, he knows what the message is going to be. He knows.
No.
Yeah, so he knew David was going to have to go away at that stage.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Claudette and then Susan.
Do we know, after the city of Nod was destroyed, what family became the Kohen?
So Eviatar, the last remnant of the city of Nod, is going to become the Kohen Gadol next. Yeah, that's what we'll take it. Yeah, Susan.
Do we believe, since Shmuel wrote this and he's not around, that this is all prophetic? Because how he's detailing them, there's a lot of details here.
Well, he's still alive at this stage.
But he's not around. Like, I mean, we don't hear about him.
Right.
He's back where he was at his home.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, all of this is quite detailed. So are we saying, you know, we said Shmuel's a prophet. So are we saying this is this whole part came to be prophetic?
So you can go back to, what we discussed earlier in a while back in terms of the writing of this story, the writing of, not just the story, but of the book, and how it's Shmuel, God, and Nasan. Rabbi Liebtag was of the belief that Shmuel's writing ends with chapter 16. And chapter 17 is already God or Nasan writing. Certainly if you take that view, then, I mean, God showed up in the beginning of this chapter, so he's on the scene.
And we've had that time talking to Bathsheba and also sort of...
Well, that hasn't happened yet. That hasn't happened yet. That's in Shmuel Bet. You're stuck being in two different classes. That's the problem. It happens to me all the time. Literally, every day this happens to me. Yeah, okay. So, this brings us to the very painful destruction of the city of Nov. And there are layers and layers to be seen in what happens here. There's a lot to talk about. I'm just making a note for myself because there's something I don't want to forget to say later. Okay. Let's read through it. Pasuk Tet Zayin, sentence 16. Vayomer Hamelech, Most Tamus Achimelech, Ata V'chol Beis Avicha. Shaul does not accept Achimelech's explanation. He orders the death of Achimelech and his entire clan. Vayomer Hamelech L'Ratzim Hanitzavim Alav. So Shaul turns to, literally, it sounds like the runners who are standing over him, standing like serving him, waiting on him. Sobu v'hamisu kohanei Hashem. Circulate and kill the priests of God. Ki gam yadamim David, because their hand is with David also. V'chi yadu ki voreachu v'lo galu es ozni. They knew he was fleeing and they didn't tell me. They refused. They were not willing to carry it out. So, who are these ratzim, these runners? The simple read, anonymous members of the king's court. Right? They're disposable. We have no idea who they are. However, the Talmud Yerushalmi and the Medrash Tehillim say, no. We actually know who these people are. I'm wondering why I presented it this way in this. But we'll see in a moment in the Gemara and in the Medrash that it's actually none other than Avner and Amasa. Avner, who was Shaul's lead general, and Amasa, who is part of the family of David, Yoav, and so on. Amasa is his own story. Amasa will end up being the general for Avshalom. He'll end up getting killed by Yoav. Well, spoiler, sorry. Don't worry, everybody in these books gets killed by Yoav at some point. So Avner and Amasa are the two. The Radak does not like this idea. Because the Radak says Avner and Amasa are not anonymous people. They're people of standing. You wouldn't just call them the Ratzim, the runners. You would have named them if that's who it was. And he says, well, maybe you would have to read the sentence then as Haratzim Vehanitzavim Alav. The Ratzim are the runners, and Nitzavim Alav, the ones who stand over him, that will be Avner and Amasa. That's Radak's suggestion if you want to take the view that it's Avner and Amasa. Why do they refuse to carry out the order? So the commentators do not assume that it's because they're supporting David. That's not what this is about at all. Says the Yerushalmi in source number 6, they refuse because it's just too terrible a thing to do. We're not willing to save our positions by massacring Nov. Take a look at number 6, the Yerushalmi. Amrule, they said to Shaul, Klum islach alinan ela hadein zunra vadein kalinirin. What do you have over us? Just the zunra and kalinirin, which are Greek terms likely, for different things that royal servants have. You know, in other words, the marks of our service, this our standing in the court. Hatrifilach, thanks, we'd like to give it back to you. We're not going to do this in order to hold on to a position. It is simply too terrible. The Medrash on Tehillim, on our Perek that we've said refers to this story, chapter 52, says it's because their mitzvos protect them. Quotes a pasuk from Koheles, Amar Shlomo, Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davar ra. One who guards mitzvot will not do anything bad, will not know any evil. This is the Gemara in Sota Daf Chafalov talks about this idea that your mitzvos protect you from doing things that are bad. I use this in the drasha on Shabbos at the Bayit for anyone who was there. So somebody who does mitzvos is never going to do bad things. Ze Avner va'amasa shlo hinichu lingoa v'kohanim. That's Avner and Amasa who would not let him touch the Kohanim, or they would not touch the Kohanim themselves. Translation of that line is a little bit awkward. But the point is, they don't refuse because they're supporting David. They refuse because this is just too terrible a thing to do. That's what it comes down to. Well, that doesn't stop Shaul. Take a look at what comes next in Pasuk Yudches, sentence 18. Vayomer Hamelech le Doeg. And it is written Doeg. And Susan's been waiting for ages to ask about this. We're finally here. The king says to Doeg, Sov ata ufga b'kohanim. So you circulate and kill the Kohanim. Vayisov Doeg ha'adomi vayifgahu b'kohanim. He does it. Doeg does it. He circulates, he attacks the Kohanim. Vayomes vayomahu shmonim v'chamisha ish. He kills on that day 85 men. Nosei ephod bad. Wearer of ephod bad, a linen ephod. I'm going to now take you through this pasuk slowly because there is an awful lot here. And the next pasuk also, there's an awful lot there. But we got to take this bit by bit. So first of all, having Doeg be the one to carry it out makes a certain degree of sense. The Torah, when it talks about certain capital crimes, it says, Yad ha'edim tia bovarishon ala hamiso, the hand of the witnesses will attack first to execute the person who is guilty. It's Devarim 17:7, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Memhei, applies it even beyond the context in Devarim. So it could be that what he's doing here actually makes sense, having Doeg do it. But then we see that Doeg's name is changed here to Doeg in the way that it is written. Not the way that it is pronounced, but in the way that it is written. You know, some of you were in my Tuesday class last year when we learned root, and I talked about Kri Uktiv, texts that are written one way in Tanakh, but are pronounced a different way. And we said at the time that we make drashos. You're allowed to, not allowed to, you're supposed to, learn things from the written form of the word and the pronounced form of the word. In other words, we do not assume that it's simply a mistake in the text. The way it's written is wrong, and we just never bothered to correct it. We've just been telling people to pronounce it differently. We assume that there is something to be said for the written one as well. Is that true every time? See the shear that we had then. But based on that, three different approaches to why it says Doeg in the text. The first one, the simplest one, goes to Radak. Source number 6. Look at this. L'Doeg Ksiv, it's written to Doeg. Ukri L'Doeg, but we read it as L'Doeg. Ki haya nikra Doeg v'Doeg, because people called him both names. Don't get hung up on it. You know, we have an Israeli fellow in the Beit Midrash who sent me a WhatsApp the other day. I don't know why he suddenly looked at it, but you know, when all the guys come to join our Beit Midrash, they get letters of support for immigration, and he had a letter for me for immigration, and it has my name signed at the bottom, but my name is signed Michael, because that's my English name. But he's Israeli. It never dawned on him that there was some kind of like distinction, you know, that you would have an English name and a Hebrew name. He said, why does this say Michael? So I had to sit down and explain to him that people, yeah, it's a thing. But in terms of what's going on here, so his English name was Doyeg. He had a name, Doyeg. He had another name, Doeg. That's one explanation. Second explanation, also brought in Radak, is that it's not about the meaning of the name. It's about the fact that you're changing it altogether. You're changing his name, sort of like when you call David Ben Yishai. We're changing his name to reduce him because he did such a terrible thing. Radak continues in source number 8. Umidrasho ki lekach katub doyeg. He brings the medrash first, which we're going to get to. And then he says, Venira, and it appears, ki b'sha'as ha'maseh k'ra'u ha'kasuv doyeg l'gri'us shemo. That because of what he's doing here, the text calls him doyeg to degrade his name. I actually saw an article on this that suggests that, you know, we have people in Tanakh who get letters of Hashem's name added to them, to honor them. We add the hey, the vav, the yud. And then there are other cases in Tanakh. Hang on, Ricky, you have to wait a little bit. You have other cases in Tanakh where letters of hey, vav, and yud are subtracted in order to reduce their honor. But I don't see how that really works here, because here you're giving him a yud, which is a letter of Hashem's name. So I don't like that article. I did give you a link to it if anyone wants to see it. It's in source number 9. But that's a second approach to what's happening, is we're changing his name to say he's not worthy. And then third approach is the approach of the Medrash. And that suggests it's a new name for him because of what happened here. Because of what happened here. Take a look at source number 10, the Talmud Yerushalmi playing on dag as fish, lidayeg, to fish, to catch fish. Says the Yerushalmi, lidoyeg ksiv, it's written lidoyeg, to doyeg, amarlo, nispasta kadag, Shaul said to doeg, you are caught like a fish. Ata avadata rabsa, you did something large with your testimony against them. Sovatal pagav b'kohanei Hashem. You should be the one to circulate and strike the kohanim of Hashem. So the Yerushalmi says that he's saying, yeah, you're like a fish. It's going to be on you to do this one. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in the Bavli in source number 11 offers another one, playing off the sound of it. Doyeg sounds like oi. So he says, number 11, ksiv doyeg, doeg ksiv doyeg. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, b'tchila yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'doeg shema yetzei zeh l'tarbus ra'ah. Earlier in his career, Hashem was worried that he was going to go bad. So Hashem was doeg about him. Doeg meaning to worry. However, la'achar sheyatza, once he went, amar vai sheyatza zeh, he said, oi, that this one went off, and he calls him doyeg. So first he's doeg, meaning to worry, and then he is doyeg because, oi, now it's too late. So doeg carries it out, he executes the family of Achimelech, 85, nosei ephod bad. So this is very interesting, this business about the ephod bad. Your gut instinct when you read this is probably to say, well, the ephod is a garment that the Kohen Gadol wears. He has an ephod. However, and it's some kind of a tunic. The problem is that the ephod, as we're told in the Torah in Parshas Tetzaveh, is made of wool. Bad is linen. So it wouldn't be a linen ephod. That can't be what we're referring to. So Radak, in source number 12, explains. He first points to the Targum, the Aramaic commentary, which says dechashrin lemilbash ephod devutz, kohenim who are eligible to wear a linen ephod. It's about their eligibility. And he says, what does that mean? Nira leferushav, ki hu harag yoser mishmonim v'chamisha. This goes back to what I said to you earlier. Doeg killed more than 85 people. Aval ashmonim v'chamisha hayu re'uyin l'bosh ephod bad. 85 were those who were top tier, worthy of wearing this linen ephod, which was a mark of stature. Those who were great in divine service, they wore a linen garment, right? For those who are in Shoftim with me, remember Gidon? He made a gold ephod. So people had a special ephod. David wore an ephod bad on the day when he brought the Aron, or tried to bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim. So the idea here is that he kills more than that, but he kills 85 who have this mark of greatness. But we're not done, because Doeg has more to do. Doeg is going to kill everybody. Take a look at the next pasuk. Pasuk Yutes, sentence 19. Ve'eis Nov ira kohanim hi kalafi cheref. He killed everybody in Nov, the city of Kohanim, by the sword. Me'ish ve'ad isha, man, woman, me'olel ve'ad yonek. You know, there's an interesting comparison you could make to Parshas Nitzavim, where they talk about everybody being gathered and whether the word ad implies a spectrum. Here, that doesn't seem to work. All right, it's a side note. But he kills everybody, the men, the women, the babies. Vishor, vachamor, oxen, donkeys, vaseh, and sheep, lefi, charev, by the sword. I have a hard time thinking that he didn't have somebody doing this with him, just on a practical level. Like, he's one guy. I would have to think that he's leading some group or something like that. But whoa, is this a problem? He wasn't even told to do this. Shaul said, kill Beis Achimelech. Doeg, what in the world is wrong with you? Right? Not to mention, I know that everybody already is thinking it. Go back to chapter 15, sentence 9. Right? Chapter 15, sentence 9. The command to wipe out Amalek. Notice the wording? Right? Basically the same as our wording here. The Shaul spares the people of Amalek. You know what? That's not the pasuk I wanted. Sorry. Sentence 3 is the one I wanted. He was told to kill Me'ish ve'ad Isha, Me'olel ve'ad Yoneik, Mishor ve'ad Sa, Migamal ve'ad Chamor. The only one that's not there is the camel. The camel is different. I saw a commentator who suggests the reason why the camel doesn't appear in our story is because Amalek, as desert people, would have had camels. There are no camels in the city of Nov. That's why the camels aren't mentioned. But this is shouting, like, notice me. We're going to come back to that next week. But now we really have to understand, what in the world is Doeg doing here? How do we grasp what he's done in doing this? So I'm going to say a couple of things, and we're going to pick up with it next week as well. One way to look at it is that it's Doeg's initiative. Doeg does this himself. And if you could say it fits his relationship with David. Right? We said he wants to intimidate everybody. Take a look at source number 13 on your sheet. The Malbim says it. Leman yishme'u ha'am v'yire'u v'lo yachziku yedei David. He wants everybody to hear about this, and they won't support David anymore. That's number one. Number two, Rav Bazak, and I gave you the title of his article in number 14, he's again demonstrating his loyalty to Shaul. I'm no traitor. Look what I'm willing to do. However, Abarbanel says no. Abarbanel says this was Shaul's order. This was Shaul's decision, not Doeg's decision. Take a look at source number 15. He says, "V'hanachonu sheShaul chashav shayu haKohenim ha'Ela mizera beis Eli." Shaul knows that the Kohenim of Nob are the descendants of the house of Eli. It's only been one generation since Eli. So he knows that these are descendants of Eli, and he knows that Eli's house didn't do what God told them to do. This is why they sinned at David's word regarding David, because they're so bad. They sin against God. He thinks the whole city of Nob is in cahoots. V'shalachin hayam mehatzedek sheyamusu kulam. Achra hayosim mekulal mipi Hashem. And he says it will be just for all of them to die. God cursed them. And not only the Kohanim, the Givonim. V'shegama Givonim asher ayu benov herimu negdo. He thought the Givonim also were plotting against him. So this is not really something to cram into the last 4 minutes. I'm going to pause here for a second because I know that people had questions. I think I'm actually going to take the questions and comments rather than raise them to the Givonim topic, because that's too big a deal. Susan.
Are Kohanim not allowed to fight back?
They are allowed to fight back. Kohanim have a history of fighting back. Yeah, no, we...
We don't know why that they just stood around and let themselves be killed. And their children and all of this.
So we don't know about weapons there. Remember that there was only one weapon in the Mishkan, and that was the sword of Goliath, this kind of trophy that's there. It could well be he doesn't have it. I think it's more likely that Doeg commands people beneath him as troops. I don't see another way to read it.
Okay.
Yeah. Ethi, you were going to say?
I was going to say to Susan, okay. When David came, there were no weapons, so they don't have any weapons.
Right.
But from the other hand, I have two things, two thoughts.
Ethi, it's still 85 people against one.
It's more than 85. Yeah.
And it's not a gun. It's the sword.
Yeah. That was a question I was going to ask earlier, but you asked.
Okay.
The other thing is that the Kohanim are, you are a Kohen from son from father to son, etc.
Yeah.
So it's to assume that all of them are from the house of Eli, because they're all from father to son.
But, and also, they had cities, I think I must have mentioned it at some point, they had cities of Kohanim that were divided up by family. So that family lived in that place. This was their town.
And the other thing is about the Doeg.
Yeah.
I was thinking they changed the name like Yimach Shmo.
Well, that's along the lines. I mean, not as strong as that, but that's along the lines of what Radak is saying. L'griut Shema. Yes. Ricky, you were going to say before? And then Sandra, I see your hand. It's hard to see it, but I see it.
I also was wondering about the extra yud because of the letters of the tetragrammaton, that there must be some meaning there.
Yeah. Well, now you have more than some. You have a bunch.
Sorry?
Now you have a whole bunch of explanations.
Well, one thing, perhaps he was injected with some of God's mercy, but he refused it, making what he later does so much more horrific, because his name goes back to the other spelling before.
Uh-huh. It's an interesting idea. It's an odd place to put it, but it's an interesting idea. Sandra?
I was just wondering why the double lashon of Lepicheret.
What do you mean?
Beginning of the passage, he says that no, the Arachonim become a Lepicheret.
Yeah.
And then after, when he talks about the animals, it also says Lepicheret.
Yeah, he does do it twice.
You would assume that the whole thing was with the apparent. Like, I don't see the necessity to say with the apparent at the same time.
Right. So, I did see someone who's commented on it. I don't remember what I saw. That Mikra edition says that it's supposed to be in order, it's Professor Keel writing that it's supposed to be in order to highlight the cruelty that's involved. Just how bad this was. But yeah, I hear the question. All right, we have a lot to talk about next time. We have to see who gets punished and how. We have to talk about the Givonim. And for those who are in my Tuesday class, I don't know if it's going to be this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday, I have this idea that Doeg is part of a bridge that runs in the generals of the kings. Even though Doeg is not himself a general, but he acts militarily here. It's going to connect Doeg, it's going to connect Yoav, it's going to connect Benayahu. So for those in the Tuesday class, that's going to be very interesting. And it'll confuse us all as to what book we're in. Okay.
I don't want to forget someone like Hitler. We forget, we're a bigger problem.
So it actually is based on a pasuk. There's more to be said about it. But I got to go. So
can you write me an answer? It's always bothering me.
If you send me an email, then Belina there will do. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Be well.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Yep. Chag Sameach.